there is then obviously a better inducement to replace that equipment, upgrade it.
Does the, whether a depreciation schedule has run out or whether or not the equipment is technologically sound and not obsolete or worn out control that decision?
First to handle it, I'm not sure what would control the decision with any given company. I suppose they use different criteria as to why they would replace equipment, but certainly this would be one factor that they would take into consideration.
The obsolescence and or whether it's worn out?
The obsolescence, physical wear, as well as their status tax-wise, which would affect, which would be affected by depreciation.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Scone?
Well, Gary, getting back to the amount that this is going to be, if it wouldn't have been a big number to start with, we wouldn't have ever disconnected for depreciation purposes. I don't think that was a very controversial thing, and there weren't very many. Well, it wasn't anybody who was happy about doing it, I don't think, but nevertheless, of course, the legislature went in and did it. But it was a lot of money, and just for a biennium, it was a lot of money. Now, we're talking about 81, 84, we're talking about 4 years, we're talking about two bienniums. So we're talking about a great big number, I think. And I think you need to consider, you're trying to solve the bookkeeping problem. I think you should think about trying to devise a way that that cost could be spread out maybe over the remaining life of the asset or some such thing if they go to, that wouldn't work, because we're going the wrong direction.
Representative Scone, we did discuss in our tax committee, as opposed to a one-time adjustment, perhaps a phased adjustment to get them on the same track, and there was universal dislike for that idea because of the added complexity to the whole thing.
Yeah.
You might sell an asset during that period of time, and it would just create more work rather than less. As to the costs, I guess I would simply remind you that these were based on estimates. My recollection was that they were based on factoring an Oregon figure from a national estimate. I don't think our economy has performed quite the same as the national estimate. I think the it would be very interesting to find out what the actual figure is. And that's why I say I really don't know what the figure might be. But the department, I suspect, could respond to the difficulty or ease with which that number might be acquired.
I wonder if Steve could respond to that. Steve, is it, how difficult is it to figure out the difference between depreciation schedules?
Well, on the personal income tax returns, the number that's reported there looks pretty good in terms of the number being reported on the return where it was supposed to be reported. On the corporate side, the number probably is not reliable from the standpoint that every corporation filling out the return didn't put it on the line on the form where it was requested. It may have been in some schedule buried somewhere else in the return. And so the total number from the corporate returns, I don't think, is all that reliable as to what the actual cost is.
Mm.
Well, I guess that it would work to with real estate to phase to prorate it over that period of time. But for the other shorter equipment, most some of that, a lot of it is already completely depreciated. The 3-year equipment and the 5-year equipment will be gone this year. So you're just about asking that the entire amount of the purchase would be expensed in 85, I think.
Representative Scone, yes, I think that's true for the 81 assets that were 3 and 5 years within a very short period of time. Now they would be even on the state schedule, and they would be they would be depreciated out. But you do have the other intervening years as well, 82, 83, and 84, with which it would take that much longer to get to the end of those lives. I simply wanted to bring that issue before you to have it on the table for discussion, and I'd be glad to work with Steve and anyone else to try to arrive at a number.
Madam Chair.
Representative Schoen, then Representative Henry.
Well, Gary, we appreciate the problem and understand it, and it has been a burden. There isn't any question about it, and we'd like to solve it. I'm sure we all feel that way, but being realistic, if it's too big a figure, it's not going to happen. You know, so if there's a way that it can be done without having too much of an impact, then I think that it would be more realistic to expect that something would be done. So if there is a way that can be devised, I'd say at least that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gary, did you give us an amendment? I just don't see it.
No, I do not have a note prepared at this time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Would you like to go down this, or should we try to deal with it? You'd be
in Section 4, 65, wouldn't it?
Yes.
If you want to use these out of the way, it's about 4 starts this way.
I think 10:45 is session, right?
Yeah. Steve, is the depreciation in ORS 317, 368, is that Section 4 of 2165? Is that what we'd be messing with?
What are you looking at, Bruce?
I'm looking at also 2165, Section 4.
Oh.
That is the deduction section, yes, for depreciation.
All right, so the adjustment we made at line 5, then, right? On page 3.
Well, I think what you would have would be a separate section of the statutes. This is ongoing, where that would be probably a temporary section to deal with the particular problem.
Well, I think I'd be willing to look at that amendment if Gary or anybody else could call it. I mentioned looking at a proposed amendment. With no promises.
We're going to close the hearing on House Bill 2165, open a work session on House Bill 2565 and Senate Bill 189. Let's start with 2569 so my staff can bring down Senate Bill 189. Steve, you want to start? So my time.
On 2565? Okay, 2565 is towards the end of your binder under the tab. If the little white insert having the number on it hasn't disappeared yet. Okay, you had testimony yesterday from Mr. Love with some language amendments. I took those to council. They were reworked a little bit. And following the bill in your binder, you should have a copy of those amendments, Legislative Council, dated 3/21/85. Mm-hmm. We should walk through those and then perhaps let me kind of point out the policy decisions that are incorporated in those amendments and see if that's still the intent of the committee. Basically, the amendments delete the current language in the bill and start over. Okay? And you're taking two sections of the ORS, the section that was originally amended in 2565, deleting it and inserting it in 314.415. With some other changes. Right, so if we can go to the proposed amendments sections then. The first change in 314.415 is begins in line 19 and following, the underlined section, where now an original return can be filed within 3 years of the due date. Right? So what was a two-year deadline to file a return for a refund claim would now be 3 years, excluding extensions. Right? That was an issue brought up yesterday. The rest of the language there is existing language that's in 316 that would be inserted here.
Steve, I have a question. Mr. Love's proposed amendments in 3144.15.1a adds the language, or if the income of the taxpayer is not taxable under Oregon law. And that was not picked up in the LC draft. Was there a reason for that?
Yes. The department had an objection to that language being there, and right now I can't remember the reason.
One of the policy questions is excluding or including on line 22. Is that right?
Well, first of all, from 2 years to 3 years.
Okay, yeah, we got that one.
Okay.
And we got excluding extensions. Part,
yes.
Okay, now the question I've got, Rolina, is Mr. Love's amendments, on his amendments, page 2, toward the top of the, well, upper third of the page, he's adding the language, or if the income of the taxpayer is not taxable under Oregon law. And obviously, LC has not picked up that language. I'm wondering what the position of, I don't recall the debate over that line.
We had agreed.
Berlina, you want to come to the microphone?
In the discussion subsequent to the hearing yesterday,
yeah.
There were some further agreements as to what was necessary and what was not necessary.
Yeah, for the record, I'm Berlina Crosley, Department of Revenue. Representative Hugo, we did talk to Bill Love about that. And we felt it was redundant. It is in the old language, but is not needed here. If the income of the taxpayer is not taxable, then it is already eligible for the refund, okay. And that's covered. And if the amount of tax found due on the return or corrected by the return is less than the amount there to pay, it's just redundant. And he agreed to that,
okay.
Striking.
Thank you.
Well, is there a period of time? Is there a deadline in case that money was paid to the state that even though it's not eligible for tax purposes, that it can be returned or that the individual can put in a claim and get the money back?
Well, there is, Representative Skinn, there is an amended return statute of limitations, which is 3 years, and that's not being amended in this bill. Any
so
taxpayer.
Also, then.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Excluding extensions.
Excluding extensions, correct.
Is that correct? Or is it including extensions?
Excluding extensions.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Laying the record down.
Let the record show.
Okay, then the rest, pages 2 and 3 of those amendments are existing language in 314, very long statute. On page 5, then, subsection 6 and 7, again, is existing language carried forward from 316 into 314, so that it's all together in one place. The next policy decisions are in section 3. These are beginning in section 3. This was rewritten so that the retroactive provisions requested would be in a separate section and be made a part of 314 rather than incorporated into 314.415. So you have the policy decision whether there are to be any retroactive provisions, and if so, then what that beginning date and ending date is in the bill here. It's December 31, 1977, or tax years ending on or after December 31, 1977. The original amendments had 75, and then added from yesterday to add clarification an ending date prior to January 1, 1982. So there's a specific period of tax years there that would be covered by the retroactive provisions.
For clarification, does the 3 years go on, the provision that...
Yes, that would be a permanent part of the statutes. That would be a permanent change.
Do I hear any discussion relative to legislative council and departments drafting this using excluding? Let's get the discussion going. Are we all
using excluding? No, there's still.
Okay.
Can I
sure.
Finish with page 6 first? Okay. At the top of page 6, when the department reviewed these as drafted by a council, there was still some concern about the language in the first line on page 6, where it says, shall be examined, audited, and et cetera. The department would prefer that be deleted and it just be withheld and paid by the department. And then Barbara Seymour made the change in line 2, removing that line and inserting instead under this section if, and then that referring to the ABC conditions. Those conditions are that, one, that the taxpayer must have previously asserted a basis for a refund, in effect filed a claim, and have been denied a refund by the department because of the expiration of a statutory period. B, that the taxpayer must file a new claim for a refund, again with an ending date of December 31 as to the time that he has to file that new claim. And C, then...
And go slow on C, Steve. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's go back to B. This will become, if we finish in July, August, September, October, this will not be law until October. So technically, somebody has 2 months to file. Is that true?
Yes.
They could
file before that, but it couldn't be acted on.
But basically, giving people that might have been lost in the cracks 2 months, because this will not be law until October.
Well, September at the earliest.
September at the earliest.
Probably October. Or November. I think I'm almost offended by that provision. We're saying we realize there's been an inequity. We're giving the department 3 years, we're giving the folks 2. We think some of the folks might have been misled for whatever reason, probably inadvertently. Now we're trying to rectify it. We're trying to give them 2 months to do it.
I wonder if I could ask Bernie a question, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hugo.
In Section 3, really on page 5, we've established a very clear window between December 31, 77 and January 182. Okay, does it make any difference then if on page 6 we were to change that deadline to 1986? We would give someone until December 31st, 1986 to file a claim against that window.
Now, Representative Hugo, I also agree that it is an extremely short period, and if that was lengthened, I don't see any problem with that.
Okay.
We were more concerned in just having a point in time where then we didn't have to worry about the retroactive provisions anymore, so you would still be accomplishing
that. I think the five-year window satisfies that, doesn't it?
Actually, it's when they would file the claim is really what is at issue on page 6, and that would still be needed in addition to the window period.
Okay.
Or October 15th, I would take care of extensions.
Yeah, are we in work session?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Okay, well.
Yes, we are.
I'd move to amendments on page 6 to at line 9, changing 1985 to 1986.
The other, I accept your motion.
Thank you.
The other idea would be to have it either April 15th or October 15th, which is the last extension. It's very clear.
April 15th, 86.
Or October, which if they've got 2 extensions.
I don't see why that date wouldn't be just as good, really. In fact, I was wondering about the filing date being more relevant than the calendar year in
the April 1586.
Well, how about October?
October 15th.
That,
or October
15th. That would be the end of the extensions.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll consider a friendly amendment, making October 15th, 86.
Okay. You've heard the appropriate to take? Yeah, let's do it then. You've heard Representative Hugo's amendment. Is there any objection to October 15th, 1986? All right, let's go on.
Okay. Subsection C on line 10. The language has been changed from yesterday. No interest shall be paid on any refund made pursuant to this subsection prior to April 30th, 1986, so that there would be no interest paid on the five-year retroactive period.
Now, how does that work in concert with what we've just done to the October 15th?
I think we could just move the date out in that term.
Yes, I think that would
we'll
be...
Move it to October 15th as well, Verlena?
No. Not good.
No, it would have to be 4 months after the October 15th date.
Okay.
That'd be February?
February 15th.
Yeah. February 15th?
Yes.
These peculiar dates are going to raise a lot of questions on the
strange
House floor.
But yes, that's what it would be. Theoretically,
it would be the date or some way to be more convenient to the department, like quarter ending or something.
In March 15th, something like that, maybe even April 15th. But generally what was he was trying to do was give the same period of time that is allowed for a normal return, which is about 4 months before the interest begins. So that was what Mr. Love was trying to accomplish.
You know what we're trying to accomplish. What would you suggest for date there?
I still think it makes sense with the 4 more months. I think you can use that as a rationale, that it still gives the department four months to process those refund claims without the interest beginning.
You don't
so
want
four
April,
months from October 15th?
You don't want April 15th?
I have no objection to that. It's clean that way. It just corresponds to the due
let's
date.
Let's have April 15th of 80.
87.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's cleaner.
So December 31 becomes April?
April 30th.
No.
December 31, 1985 becomes October 15th.
You're staying with October there.
Of 1986. On line 11, April 30th becomes April 15th, 1987.
And at line 12 and 13 as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think we changed the April 30th on line 12. Also April 15th.
Mm-hmm.
1987.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hugo.
We talked about, Representative Hammond was talking to you about interest, 18% interest. Is that the rate that's going to apply on this for this provision?
Representative Hugo, I would say that it probably would if it wasn't changed. We look at the interest rate 2 times a year. By rule, we have to. And at that time, it could go up or down.
I'm looking at line 12 where it says the rate shall be provided by law. In fact, it's established by rule, isn't it?
Indirectly. The law gives us the right to set that rate by rule. So we get back to the law. But yes, the rate is set by rule.
I was wondering if someone were reading this and said, why in the world is 18% the rate? Well, obviously the legislature must have done it because it's done by law, when in fact it's not. Would you like us to set it by law?
That had some problems too. I'm not sure. There's pluses and minuses both ways, I think.
Okay.
By rule, racing red flags, possibly.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hanlon.
The word law encompasses, I think, number one, the statute or the ORS, which we as a legislature deal with, and also encompasses the rules and regulations. They are both law.
I'm aware of that, Representative Hamlin. I'd just like to clarify who's setting that rate. But that's okay. We can live with that, I suppose. I don't particularly care for 18% in 1985, though, but that's just one individual's opinion.
The record will show. I was trying to steamroll earlier. Do we have any more...
Well, would you accept changes in the language in lines 1 and 2?
The proposal of line 1, Steve, was to delete shall be examined, audited?
Yes, because that would possibly conflict with some other legislation the department has where they might send the refund first and examine the return subsequent to paying the refund, but still having the right to go back and audit and adjust that refund.
I have no problem, Madam Chair, with that amendment.
Allow me to ask a tacky question. There's a presumption that if I, now we have not, I've had my salary withheld or whatever. I mean, I have not filed. That's causing the problem. Now we're coming back and saying, if you apply for this refund, you will automatically be audited? Is that what we're...
No.
Is that what we're saying? We're just saying the department can? They could anyway, couldn't they?
Yes. You have to file a new claim.
Yes. Right,
so that claim, that new claim would be subject to audit if the department chose to.
It says shall be examined, audited, and paid. It shall be audited.
Madam Chairman.
Just a technical question, but it... Yes, Representative Schoon.
Well, if what I'm saying relates to what you... the point you're making, I think that the new language would require that all those claims be paid. Maybe irrespective of their validity. I know what you're getting at, but on the other hand, if we just say that the claim for excess taxes shall be paid by the department, okay, subject to the following conditions, but the conditions don't necessarily mean that they were, that the claim itself was valid.
Served the basis for a refund or tax return.
Yeah, but this is just talking about other conditions. There are conditions other than the validity of the claim itself.
Madam Chairman, I respond.
Yes.
The reason why I brought this to Steve's attention is because we have another bill that's already been heard to use an amended return process that the IRS uses, and that is to get refunds out faster to the taxpayer and also to keep that interest rate at a minimum. We issue them very fast, and then later on we will audit, we will pull some of them for audit, or in maybe auditing another year we will realize that there's an error made in that return. At that time we want to be able to audit it. This does, as we read it, say that return that is now being filed has to be, since it says shall, has to be examined, audited at the time that we receive it. And we would like not to have to do that when we receive it. It doesn't mean that you would get audited for like 3 years or 2 years or whatever, but that return itself would have to be looked at by an auditor, basically.
Okay.
And that would be slowing the process down considerably.
Okay.
So that, just because you pay it doesn't mean that you couldn't go back and get it if you subsequently examined it. And
that's correct.
You had made an error.
That's correct, Representative Schoon.
You comfortable with that?
It does say the state 18%, which is much too high, right?
All right.
Steve, can you explain the amendments at line 2? I'm confused by the handwriting there. I'm not sure what Barbara's trying to
say. Paid by the department under this section if, rather than subject to all the following conditions.
Which is a form and style.
Yes.
I think the committee's comfortable with page 6 with the amendments we've made.
Mm-hmm. So, Madam Chairman.
What are you moving? What
you do? Well, moving the amendments that deleting examined, comma, audited, and on line 1.
I agree the end.
I think that should be.
Held and paid.
This is the refund claim shall be paid by the department. You know, deleting all the intervening words there. And so I think the and should be taken out.
It'd be refund claims where it reads that on line 27 on the previous page, and taking out all the four excess taxes, et cetera.
Include taxes withheld.
Yeah.
Comma. Shall be paid.
Shall be paid by the department.
Okay, you're right.
Okay, now, I'm not sure, Steve, exactly where under the section of goes in there on line 2.
That would be under this section. DF would be the new line 2 language.
Oh, completely new line 2. Completely new line 2.
Yes.
Okay.
Subject to all of the following conditions would be deleted.
Okay.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, line 1 would read withheld, comma, shall be paid by the department. Line 2 would read under this section if colon.
Because you can audit, for example. Okay. You've made a note of those.
Yes.
Is there any objection